Today's episode is brought to you by Built Bar. Go to BuiltBar.com, use the promo code LOCKEDON, and get $10 off your next order. Today's show will not include some of the production elements that you're used to, like the Millie's Open and some of our other things, because the computer that I normally use to produce the podcast died on me, and it has all of those things. So bear with me as I get the production value back over the course of this week. I'll figure it out. But for today, it's just going to be silence. Sorry, fans of the Millie's Open. Hi there, John Corrales here from MassLive.com. I am their Boston Celtics beat reporter and host of this here Locked On Celtics podcast. Those of you who are new to the show, thank you. We are normally a regular Monday through Friday podcast, although last week, due to the circumstances, felt it more appropriate to not do a show on Friday. But generally speaking, it's a Monday through Friday show. So you'll get Monday through Friday podcasts, five podcasts a week covering the Boston Celtics. All of you regular listeners, thanks for tuning in on a regular basis. Today, post-game, going to talk, as usual, positives in segment one, including Marcus Smart just going off. Negatives, including Daniel Tice not going off. And in the third segment, just a general overview of this game. What can we carry over? What carries over into game two? I think that's the biggest question out of this. When you have a blowout like this in game one, with so many things that look like aberrations, what is real? What is not? That's going to be in the final segment. So let's start with the positives out of this 112-94 win over the Toronto Raptors. And the very first positive that you have to go to is Marcus Smart's shooting and Boston's shooting in general. When Toronto was ice cold, I mean just ice cold. At one point, I think they were shooting like 28% from the field. And their starters were something like 1 of 14 from 3 at one point in this game. It was just, you talk about make-miss league. There was a whole lot of that make-miss thing going on here. But why were certain shots, why were the Celtics making them? Why weren't the Raptors making theirs? Again, that's going to be mostly in the third segment. But Marcus Smart's shooting really stands out. His first three, about 30 seconds into this game, from the left corner, he drilled that nice and easy, got a good clean look. And it highlights, I think, one of the flaws in the Toronto defense. And so Marcus Smart shot 5 of 9 from 3. He was 5 of 7 from the corners. So only missed 2 of the 7 corner shots that he took. The Celtics overall shot 17 of 39, 43.5% from 3. That's already a good number. But nearly a third of their three-pointers came from the corners. Boston shot 9 for 12. From the corners in general. So Marcus Smart was 5 for 7, but the rest of the Celtics were 4 for 5. So that's going to be a shot that the Raptors give up corner threes. Their defense is weird. They had the second best defense in the league, according to, you know, points per 100 possessions, the efficiency numbers. They are the absolute worst team during the regular season, giving up three-pointers. However, they were 7th in opponent corner three-point percentage. So they gave up those shots, but they didn't get killed by those shots. Why? Because they still managed to scramble and contest a lot of those shots. So they kind of almost want you to feel this sense of confidence that, here's a corner three. That's a shot that everybody works towards getting. But they still manage to go out and contest and make those shots difficult. They also like to try and maybe get some people into the corners that might not be the best three-point shooters. So their defense, again, weirdly giving up a very desirable shot, but good at defending that shot. They did not defend that shot well here. So Marcus Smart shooting after going, 2 for 14 against Philly? Coming in and shooting like this is huge, because without Gordon Hayward, they need somebody to pick up some of the scoring slack. And the Celtics built up a big first quarter lead without Jason Tatum scoring a bunch, but because Marcus Smart scored 10 first quarter points, the Celtics were able to keep their offense going while the Toronto offense was struggling. So that's the positive number one. Positive number two, Robert Williams, I thought came in and did pretty much what Boston wanted. Now, does he have a lot to improve on? For sure he does. There are a couple of defensive lapses. He was a little out of position, which is typical, right, for Rob. But he was good enough, and because he's so athletic, he got up for a couple of blocks. The two blocks that he had were ridiculous. One was on a straight-up jumper that he just got up, and I forget who it was. Was it Ibaka? I forget who it was. But it was a shot that you probably think that you're going to get off clean. And he gets a fingertip on it because he's, you know, ridiculous. And then the second block on a layup, he just comes out of nowhere and flies through the air and blocks the shot. It's the type of defense that, because he is who he is, he can make a couple of those plays. But more importantly than that, his offense, I thought, was really what the Celtics wanted out of Rob. Come in, the Raptors are worried about Kemba Walker pulling up. They just watched how Kemba Walker crushed Philly with pull-up jumpers, so they're playing up higher. And I remember tweeting it out I don't know if I said it on the podcast, but in the Philly series, when they decided that they were going to come up and play higher on the pick and rolls, I thought this would be a great opportunity to use Rob and have him just get in and out of the picks and go and put pressure on the rim. And when I said it last week on the podcast, when I was being asked about who the X factor is, this is the guy. This is what I expected. That get in and out of the pick, roll hard to the rim. When his first dunk, when I think it was Gasol that was playing up high, they had Lowry on the right corner. You had a shooter in the corner, and he was occupied. He couldn't be in. They couldn't tag the roll man. All of a sudden, it's just a quick dump off to Rob, and he just goes in for the dunk. I mean, those are the types of plays that make this a Robert Williams series versus an Enes Kanter series. Enes Kanter was a DNP, and rightfully so. So, and the thing about Robert Williams is especially positive is this is kind of like a perfect scenario for him. Go in, play, next day, film, practice, go, play. The lessons are fresh in his head. And how many times have I said, he needs the minutes, he needs the playing time. Now, when you come out of that, you watch the film, you put it together in practice, and then the next game, it's right there. It's all still fresh in his head. So I expect him to be better in game two. He should be better in game two. Another positive that I want to throw in there is Semi Ojeleye, who came in and gave the Celtics some pretty decent minutes. 22 minutes for him. He only shot 1 of 5, 1 of 3, but that was an important three-pointer. But more importantly is that he bodied up Pascal Siakam. And when Pascal Siakam was trying to go to work in the post, and this is something I'm going to talk about later on as well, the strength of Ojeleye and the strength of Marcus Smart and coming in and being able to play these minutes and defend Pascal Siakam and keep him from just backing you down, to go in there and body him up like he did is super important. Any minutes that the Celtics can get off the bench that can be productive without Gordon Hayward, it's a huge win for the Celtics. So I thought Semi coming in, defending Pascal Siakam the way he did, keeping him a little off balance in the post was really good. And finally, the last positive, which kind of bridges the positives and negatives, transition defense. Now, I thought the transition defense was pretty good, but after the game, Marcus Smart, Daniel Theis, Brad Stevens, I asked them about the transition defense, and they're all like, could be better. I said, really? Could be better? I thought it was pretty good. You know, The Raptors only have 7 fast break points. You turn the ball over 23 times, which is a negative coming up next. But you turn the ball over 23 times, you only give up 7 fast break points. That's insane. Brad Stevens immediately said, that has to be a bad stat. That's a bad stat. If you look at it again, and we'll look at it again, you'll see that it was probably, there's no way we gave up 7 transition points, 10 fast break points. So, you look at the advanced numbers, went to cleaning the glass, and you see that off of steals, the Celtics were really good in transition defense. The Raptors only were able to turn half of their steals into transition opportunities, which is really good. The Celtics were able to get back half the time on the Raptors steals, which they had, let me quickly look this up. They had 10 steals. So only 5 of those turned into fast break opportunities, and they didn't score on all of those fast break opportunities because they only had 7 fast break points. And if they scored on all of those, it would have been at least 10, maybe more if they'd hit threes. So that's really good. But as we pause, the negative in this is how the Celtics defended off of missed shots. The negatives coming up. So a lot of us thought the transition defense was pretty good, and it was in certain scenarios, like I just said, off of the steals. They were pretty good. However, there is something to the Celtics saying, could be better. Because 33% of Boston's missed shots became transition opportunities. And they had an offensive rating of 136.4. This is all according to Cleaning the Glass. 136.4 offensive rating on those 33% of those opportunities off of missed Boston shots. That's a big number, 136.4. And if Boston, now some of it was, I think, exacerbated. This is obviously small sample size, it's one game. But I think in the second half, when the Celtics had their lead up to 21, 22, 23 in the third quarter, I think that's when the Celtics have a tendency to kind of let up. And I think that contributed to them not getting back. I think the first half was a lot better in transition than the second half was. And, later in the game, when it was garbage time, I'm certain that some of those opportunities became transition opportunities for Toronto. But it does not change the fact that there is an entire game's worth of data here, and Toronto did get out off of Boston misses, and they did get into transition. So that's where Toronto is going to make their run. That's how Toronto is going to win game 2 and make this a series. But if they cannot, if Boston cleans this up and they get back off of their misses, well, then that will help the Celtics potentially take game 2. Brad Stevens, before the game, I've been saying it. Everyone else who does a podcast or a column or writes about this team has been saying it. It's no secret that the number one thing is stopping them in transition, because they have the 14th overall offense in the NBA this past regular season. And that's partially because in the half court, they're not that particularly great. They're just not that. Their defense, their second-ranked defense, fuels much of their offense. And if they can't turn that defense into offense, then that's going to be a problem. The Celtics also had too many turnovers. And a lot of those turnovers came in, I saw a lot of them in the second quarter. They had, it's 22 turnovers. They only had 3 in the first half, the first quarter. So that means that the rest came in quarters 2 through 4. The second quarter was, there was that big sloppy stretch where the Toronto went into a zone. And of course the Celtics struggled, because they typically do the first time they see a zone. And it's not just the Celtics. You're used to a certain defense, and all of a sudden they zone it up, and there are going to be a couple of sloppy possessions until you figure it out. The Celtics definitely have to be better about figuring out that zone. But Jason Tatum had a few kind of just weird, like wild decisions. Daniel Tice in the second quarter, he's another negative. Who it's weird to say that he's a negative because he did finish with 13 points and 15 rebounds, career high rebounds in the playoffs, his first career playoff double-double. He himself overall was not a negative, but his offense was a negative. A couple of really easy shots that he missed, a bad turnover. Like there was the one where Tatum, now the pass was a little hard, but it went right through Tice's hands. He didn't catch it. Turnover, ball goes the other way. Brad Stevens on the other side, when there was a stoppage in play, was like clapping, like, come on, Tice! That Tice had a tough offensive game. He did get to the line seven times, and he did make all seven. So that's good. I don't want to say it was an entirely negative game for him. He did have a couple of blocks. He did other things. Like I said, the 15 rebounds is big. That's important. He definitely, I think, overall was more net positive on the floor. But offensively, he has to finish those shots. He has to. And I'm starting to really think that it's a confidence thing. I think I saw Jason Tatum in that second quarter, like, just look over and like, come on, man, let's go. You come on, we need you. Tice, they need Tice to finish off plays. They got away with it in this game, but they need him to finish off these plays. And the four turnovers that he had contributed to the overall bad number. Marcus Smart had five turnovers. A few of those were balls going out of bounds. Still too many, you know. But when you're a point guard and you know you play the 31 minutes, I'd expect three turnovers or so. A couple, like I said, there's too many. But because he's Marcus Smart, one of those turnovers was this casual behind the back like play that the ball got away from him. But he immediately shuts down Fred VanVleet and gets the ball back for his one steal. So there's always one Marcus Smart turnover where he gets it back. Like he has this knack for just going and, oh, what a horrible play that was. Let me make this awesome defensive play to kind of counteract that. So he did that again against Fred VanVleet. So, and like I said, a couple of those turnovers were, there was one to Jalen where he kind of threw it out of bounds. Maybe he was expecting Jalen to cut, and Jalen was kind of going behind the three-point line. Throwing the ball out of bounds, okay, you don't want to do that, right? But throwing the ball out of bounds is not the worst turnover in the world. If you're trying to make a play, okay, miscommunications happen. At least it's not a live ball turnover that gets the ball going the other way. So that's, I don't want to say turnovers are acceptable, but you expect a point guard who's trying to make a play to maybe try a little too hard once or twice and turn the ball over. But Marcus Smart had five, Tice had four, Tatum had four, two for Jaylen Brown, three for Brad Wanamaker. Too many, just too many. And that's going to burn them. So I think the Celtics, were able to get away with playing a little sloppy with the turnovers, but they were bailed out by Toronto's bad shooting. Now, that bad shooting, I have questions about this. You know, I don't want to oversimplify it as make-miss stuff, but there is certainly an element to that. So as I pause and look at what's sustainable, what's not out of game one, what can be replicated, what might not be, that's going to be something that I definitely look at. You should be looking at getting yourself some new Built Bars. Now, Built Bar has already been one of my favorites to when you're adding a protein bar to your diet. You don't know what you're getting with some of these. You look at the label and you're like, wow, that's a lot of sugar. Wow, that's a lot of carbs. But the reason why I like Built Bar, the reason why I spend my own money to go buy more Built Bars is because it doesn't have all of that. Now, it's got all these awesome flavors, these super sweet flavors that makes you feel like you're eating a candy bar. They're covered in 100% chocolate. They're soft and easy to chew. but they're low calorie. They're low sugar, high protein, obviously, high fiber. You can get something as low as like 110 calories with like 15 grams of protein. It's perfect. You want to use it as a meal replacement. You want to use it after a workout. It's great if you're health conscious, if you're looking to lose weight, if you're looking to maintain weight. It's good to kind of indulge, satisfy a sweet tooth, and still be healthy. Now, if you've used the promo code already for Built Bar, don't worry about it. They've reset the promo code. So use the code Locked On to get $10 off your next order, and you'll get a free cooler with your purchase while the supplies last. So get there quick. Make sure you get this before those coolers run out. Go to BuiltBar.com, use the promo code Locked On. You'll get $10 off your next order. Use the promo code Locked On for $10 off at BuiltBar.com. One of the toughest things out of a game like this is to figure out what was an aberration. What happened in this game that was such an outlier that you have to wonder, is this going to happen again? Can it happen again? So Pascal Siakam shooting 5 of 16, 0 of 3 from 3. He had 3 early fouls, scored just 13 points. Is that something that is going to be that's going to replicate itself? I don't think so. I don't think Pascal Siakam is going to have 3 fouls in the first quarter again. That you just don't see that much. And Toronto's bad shooting in general. There were some open shots. I tweeted out a couple of these. In the second quarter, there was a pivotal stretch. Things were ugly. The ball was flying around. It was not a great quarter. I saw somebody, I wish I remember who it was, tweet out, like, this is just a beautiful mess. And it was. It's a great way to describe it. It was just all over the place. Guys were making some weird decisions, wild decisions, jumping in the air and getting themselves caught. It happened on both sides. But in the midst of that, Norm Powell had a wide open three. That was kind of, there was a token challenge from Kemba, but it was a wide open three. Norm Powell is a 40% three-point shooter. That's a shot that should go down a lot, and he missed it. And the Raptors overall missed, what was their final three-point shoot? 25%. They were 10 of 40 from three. Okay, Norm Powell, 2 of 5, that's good. He's, like I said, he's a 40% three-point shooter. But that one that he missed was wide open. Is Kyle Lowry going to go 1 of 5 from three? Is Fred VanVleet going to go 2 of 11 from three again? You can't expect that to happen. I mean, even if the Celtics defense is good, even if it's better, you're still going to have to expect if Van Vliet takes 11 threes, he's going to hit probably 3 or 4 of them, right? Not just 2. So I would expect at least some of that shooting to come back. Now, Siakam blew a couple of easy shots. He was down there in the post, and he missed a couple of point-blank shots at the rim. Now, he was a little off balance, and maybe he was feeling that way because of the Celtics' defense. I thought the Celtics did a good job on him. Like I said, Semi Ojeleye did a good job on him. Marcus Smart did a good job on him. Jaylen Brown did a decent job on him. If they're going to post up Siakam, that's going to be hard. And if they're just going to run everything in the half court through Siakam in the post, that's fine. I think the Celtics have figured out a way to defend him. And if that's all he's going to do, then I think the Celtics are going to be in a good spot with that. But I still don't think he shoots 5 of 16. You know, a couple of those shots that he missed were very makeable shots. So a couple more go in for him. A couple more threes go in for Van Vliet. A couple more shots go in for Kyle Lowry. I mean, right there, you're talking about what, 10? 15 points, somewhere in that range. It just changes the dynamic of this game. I thought there were some opportunities for the Raptors to take a double-digit Celtics lead and cut it down to somewhere like 7-6, and that puts the pressure. I mean, if the Celtics, that next miss, you know, you get down on yourself if you're the Celtics. Maybe somebody gets a little tight. Maybe somebody rushes it. Maybe somebody tries to be like a little bit of a hero. Then that changes the dynamic of this game. Now, Marcus Smart shooting is another thing. Is that going to be something that gets replicated? I don't think so. I mean, Marcus Smart certainly is capable of putting together another 5 of 9 game from three. We've seen him do that. We've seen him get hot. But he also, like I said, shot 2 of 14 against the Sixers from three. Again, he's going to get those corner threes. Those are going to be there. But instead of 5 of 9, maybe he's 4 of 9 or 3 of 9. And again, if we're talking about a 10-point swing in one direction for Toronto and you take away 3 points here or there for the Celtics, well, now that's a 13 to 16-point swing. And for a game where Boston was leading by 19 to 24 for most of the game, I mean, we're talking about lead changes now. We're talking about single-digit games. So just, I think, from law of averages, there is going to be, it's not going to be quite that bad for Toronto. I don't think it's going to, but the Celtics could certainly replicate limiting Kyle Lowry and preventing him from getting to the basket. They can certainly replicate Siakam's trouble in the post and forcing him to take a bunch of shots that he's not usually hitting. Is he going to get hot in a game and maybe win a game for Toronto? Sure, that's possible. We've seen him do it before. But they certainly can make things tough on Siakam. And if they're making it tough on Siakam, if they're making it tough on Lowry, and Jason Tatum is able to guard Lowry and use his length to bother him, then I think the Celtics, those two things can really help. Now, again, that's not going to change how Van Vliet shoots or Norm Powell shoots or some of these other guys. So it's not going to be, I don't think, quite as easy as it looked in this. But I still think the Celtics have this opportunity to win game two and maybe not quite as comfortably as this, but they can replicate some of these defensive efforts and make it so, okay, so it's not a 24-point game. Maybe it's a 10-point game. And they are, you know, engaged in lead changes, but they still feel like they're building leads and giving it back, but they're still building the leads back up, especially now if they can focus on this transition defense and get back after their misses. I think there's going to be a focus in game two of the guy who shoots gets back. If you're below the foul line, okay, maybe you crash the board, but if you're above the foul line, you got to make sure that nobody gets caught too low on shots, and you got to make sure that the floor is spaced properly so at least a couple guys can get back on misses, and it's up to everyone else to sprint a little harder and not do things like turn and jaw at the refs like that. You got to focus on just getting back. So if the Celtics can improve that transition defense off of their missed shots and take away some of even those transition opportunities, then if you can still limit Kyle Lowry, if you can still limit Pascal Siakam, there's a formula here that the Celtics can put together another complete game two and win game two and take control of this series. And the last thing that I don't know what to expect here, Kemba Walker's knee, which he said he tweaked. He didn't speak after the game. Gary Washburn, who's down in the bubble, caught up with Kemba and got that information, said that there was pain in the moment, but that happened in the second quarter, I think it was. And he came back and finished. He finished the game. It didn't look like it limited him at all. He was playing. He had his step back. Everything else looked normal. We kind of forgot about it because we didn't see it limiting him at all after like the initial play, but you never know how a knee responds after, okay, the adrenaline and all of that. Like when he goes to bed and wakes up in the morning, is he going to be sore? How, like, what's he going to be able to do? Is he going to be limited at all? How are the Celtics going to treat this? Are they going to be super cautious and say, hey, he can play through this particular thing? Or are they going to say, well, we don't want to take any chances? And what happens there? And then you're starting Brad Wanamaker, and that kind of hurts things. I don't think it's going to get to that point, but just knowing how the body responds, I've certainly done it. Every basketball player has certainly gone through. You do something, you sprain something, you turn an ankle, and yeah, okay, it's fine. The adrenaline, you play through it, and then the next morning you wake up and you're like, oh my God, this is sore. So I'm going to leave that possibility out there that something like that happens with Kemba. But it's not my expectation, but it's certainly a possibility. So right now, I'm looking at the potential for some adjustments for the Celtics, just getting back. I'm looking to see how the Raptors maybe try to get Lowry sprung to get to the rim a little bit more. Maybe you set a couple more picks. Maybe you do a little more creative, like double screening or something. Maybe you change who the personnel is on the floor with him a little bit, and you go a little smaller to try and give him a little bit more space. I think getting him going early, if it's not his ankle that's bothering him, if it was just the Celtics defense, I want to see what Toronto does to kind of spring him. And they might want to run a few plays to get Siakam going early. I think that would be the way for them to go. And then we'll see. We'll talk about it more tomorrow. I'm sure there'll be a lot more to talk about after the Celtics practice, and we hear about how that practice went. So be sure to subscribe to the podcast. Again, it's a daily podcast, Monday through Friday, most weeks, aside from extenuating circumstances. So subscribe wherever you get your podcasts. Follow on Spotify. That'd be great too. Regular listeners, those 5-star ratings, those good written reviews are awesome. Go to BuiltBar.com, use the promo code LOCKEDON for $10 off your next order. Even if you used it before, you can use it again and get a free cooler while supplies last. Thanks for listening, everybody. This has been Locked On Celtics Podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network.